The Guardian.
Welcome to The Guardian Long Read, showcasing the best long-form journalism covering culture, politics and new thinking. For the text version of this and all our long reads, go to theguardian.com/longread.
The student and the algorithm. How the exam results fiasco threatened one pupil's future. Josiah Elliston Burrell had done everything to make his dream of studying architecture a reality. But suddenly, in the summer of 2020, he found his fate was no longer in his hands. By Tom Lamont. Read by Dermot Daly and produced by Esther Opoku-Jenny. At last, Josiah Elliston Burrell's last day at school. It was the 13th of August, 2020, a Thursday in the middle of a dismal pandemic-struck summer, and Elliston Burrell had returned to St. Joseph's College in Croydon for one final visit to collect his A-level grades. Tall and serene, well known on campus for wearing clothes of his own design, Elliston Burrell had on a pale grey top that he'd customised with flecks of green and pink dye, his Nikes tactfully coordinated. At 19, he was one of the oldest pupils enrolled at St. Joseph's. Such a veteran of this South London state school that younger kids sometimes swerved towards him in the corridors to reach out their fists in mute respect. Today, he took a shortcut into school, avoiding the crowds and walking up a service road that snaked between the chapel and a sports pitch. He was eager to be in and out quickly, the sooner to end a stalled career as a schoolboy and get underway on everything else. His uni years, job years, whatever life held next. It was an odd time for young people coming to the end of their secondary school educations. Exams had been cancelled because of COVID-19. All across England, a new scheme of judging, grading and sorting 2020 school leavers had been rigged up in replacement. Details of the scheme were opaque. All Elliston Burrell knew was that he had to go to an upstairs corridor in the maths department to collect an envelope containing his grades. He hurried across the playground. After 8 years, the campus was as familiar to him as any place on earth. On just about every inch of the Clarks and Kickers' scuffed floors was some echo or reminder of his halting coming of age. He passed a patch of yard where he'd once lined up as an 11-year-old newbie. A quick study when it came to the codes and fashions of his new school, its break-time blackjack, the BlackBerry flirting with girls met at bus stops, there being none at St. Joseph's till the sixth form. Elliston Burrell was 12 or 13, he remembered, when he developed an eye for fashion. Windsor knotting his burgundy tie and turning out for PE with one of his trouser legs rolled up, to stand out, you know. He was 14 and spending a lot of time in the art block, when he decided, with all the casual abruptness of a young person sensing their own potential, that he would become an architect one day. At 15, flourishing academically as well as artistically, his face was enlarged to the size of a bin lid and used in a poster ad for St. Joseph's. He still received messages from friends saying they'd seen him smiling on the sides of buses in Streatham or Tooting. Off the playground, Elliston Burrell entered the maths department, clattering in through a fire door and climbing a musty stairwell towards the second floor. He was 17, he remembered, when he found out that his teachers reckoned him capable of high grades in his final exams. 3 A's, they predicted, one each in art, Mandarin and maths. A top university in London, UCL, offered him a place to study architecture as long as he could finish school with at least 3 B's. But when those final exams came in summer 2019, Elliston Burrell had a disaster. Panicking over the phrasing of some of the questions, though he was later diagnosed with dyslexia, which may have added to his confusion, it was too late to do anything about his grades that year. He got the expected A in art, but a disappointing B in Mandarin and a shattering U, an outright fail, in maths. His place at university went to somebody else in 2019. In this way, thoroughly and brutally, end-of-school exams have returned the supreme judgment on a young person's education for at least a century. Exams are our attempt to sum up whole teenagehoods and render them as manageable labels: AAA, ACE, AAC, After the 2019 exams, Elliston Burrell had been labelled ABU. He was certain he could still be AAA, and so, taking a breath, taking his smart St. Joseph's trousers back out of the cupboard come September, he had tried again. Returning to the school he'd just left, repeating parts of his final year, coolly explaining to any younger pupils who drifted towards him, "I'm here, I'm back, I'm just redoing some exams." Those exams never took place. Schools were shut in March 2020, the announcement made hours before Elliston Burrell's 19th birthday. It was a crappy gift because he'd been flying through practice papers and was relishing the prospect of another shot at his maths and his Mandarin. Again, in 2020, he had an offer of a place at UCL. Again, it was conditional on him getting at least 3 Bs. Elliston Burrell presumed that whatever had been rigged up in replacement for 2020's exams, people were talking about an algorithm, would see the specifics of his case, register his efforts and sacrifices, judge him as a capable young man and an architect to be. Now he hustled along the upstairs corridor and received his envelope from a school administrator. Ducking into a doorway for privacy, he tore at the seal. I first met Elliston Burrell 2 years earlier when he was 17. At the time, I was researching a story about young men and masculinity, and he stood out a mile because he was the only boy to answer my questions about gender equality with a female perspective in mind. "I see my mum work extremely hard," he told me. "I've got 2 younger sisters. I see what they go through. Personally, I feel if you work hard, if you're deserving, there shouldn't be a cap. Nothing should be limited." Intuitively, he seemed to see through my personal questions to address a larger picture. "I live in Croydon," he said at one point, laughing quietly, "so that probably says a lot to you." Croydon was often in the news at the time because of rates in youth violence there. "I'm Black British, Christian. I paint. I draw. I'm into architecture, just trying to succeed." The bit about architecture turned out to be an understatement. Elliston Burrell had completed an out-of-hours course for teenagers at UCL's architecture school, and it had convinced him, beyond a doubt, that he had a calling in life. He knew exactly where he wanted to train, too. When he had his admissions interview at UCL in late 2018, he was nervous. But afterwards, one of the tutors helped carry out his portfolio of artwork, and this was interpreted as a good omen. He could hardly bring himself to open the email from UCL's admissions office when it came in May 2019. He was on the sofa, at home. His mother, Rhianne, was there too. "Mum, I bet it's a no." "Why are you being negative? Be positive." "Mum, I got an offer." I told you. We stayed in touch after that. I was curious what would happen to this ambitious, dead-set young man, and we met up several times in 2019, usually before he began a shift at the Waitrose supermarket where he worked. One day, just off the Croydon train, Elliston Burrell confessed to a daydream, switching platforms instead and carrying on into London in the direction of UCL's architecture building. He could see the backpack he would carry, his outfit, the dangling lanyard with his shiny undergraduate ID. On results day, in August 2019, crunch time he had been calling it, he woke early, logged onto a special admissions page online and learned about his great failure in maths. He recognised that the architecture dream was over, at least for a year, and his despair was so acute that finally, down for breakfast that morning, he couldn't find the words to tell his mum. So, he faked ignorance instead, going through the whole agonising performance of logging on and finding out another time. There would be intervals of speechless despair throughout the Groundhog year that followed, upbeat periods too. Sometimes, when I met up with Elliston Burrell, he was optimistic about his decision to put adulthood on hold to chase his dream. Other times, after he'd been with friends who were out in the world, off studying in party towns or already with full-time jobs and salaries, he second-guessed himself. In December 2019, he invited me to St. Joseph's, leading me on a tour of the campus he'd got to know so well since he was 11 years old. He pointed out sites of general interest, like the exact spot in the canteen queue where younger students were most vulnerable to olders pushing in, or the big bins that people used to climb over direct from the car showroom next door whenever they were running late. He showed me a few more personal landmarks too. The steel locker out of which he'd once had a beloved jacket stolen. The square of asphalt where he had his first ever and last ever fist fight. The staff meeting room where there was an enlarged photograph of him, aged 13, a model student with waves in his hair, smiling warmly at a textbook. Our tour ended in the art department. Elliston Burrell's most treasured place, he said. On the walls, there were several of his paintings, including a portrait of his mum and a self-portrait in which he had his eyes squeezed shut with pleasure as he ate a piece of mango. There was also a third painting, an obscure work in black and red that he had made in tribute to an older cousin called Miguel. When he turned through the pages of an accompanying sketchbook, we came across a note that said, "During the course of this book, my cousin was robbed and killed." Elliston Burrell rubbed his head. It had been hard, he said, hearing the news in the middle of a school term. He hadn't wanted to do much after the funeral except sit and paint. Even so, he didn't want to offer excuses for his poor showing in the 2019 exams. He was similarly loath to dwell on his dyslexia diagnosis. Sit down, be humble, that was his way. He had written it in his sketchbook along with other scribbled maxims and notes to self. Build accurately. No success without failure. In a bid to bring up his maths grade to at least a B, crucial to his goal of studying architecture at UCL, Elliston Burrell had hired an expensive private tutor that year. Relatives and elders from his church were clubbing together to cover half the cost. He paid his share by taking on extra supermarket work. When exams were scrapped in March 2020, he was already on the hook for about a grand. So he put down his textbooks and accepted any overtime shifts he was offered, covering for colleagues too ill or anxious to attend during the pandemic's first wave. This was a time when the public stood to attention on Thursday nights to applaud frontline workers. Vogue put a teenage Waitrose employee on its cover. There was a feeling in the air that young people Elliston Burrell's age, with looks and stories and postcodes similar to his, were not to be reflexively patronised or demonised, instead maybe celebrated, maybe rewarded. Kids he knew were nervous about a government algorithm that would mysteriously decide everybody's grades in lieu of exams, but Elliston Burrell told himself not to worry. He reckoned he had done right by the world in a difficult 2020, and he had reasonable hopes the world would do right by him. On the morning of the 13th of August, he woke early again, prayed, and told the mirror, "I'll get into my uni today, because I worked for it." He imagined this algorithm would pick him out as an A student, though he could live with Bs, as long as he still got onto his architecture course. When he got to school and got upstairs, he opened his envelope and shook out a page of grades. He stared for a while and then folded up the page. A for art, C for Mandarin, E for maths, the algorithm reckoned. It was not enough. Not even close. The algorithm was conceived 100 miles northwest of Croydon at the Coventry headquarters of Ofqual, the English exam regulator. Ofqual is an organisation made up of politically neutral civil servants who are empowered, encouraged, and often as not hobbled in their work by government ministers. Staff there, including the chief, a floppy-haired executive called Roger Taylor, were initially queasy about using an algorithm on such a grand scale. Could they really try to simulate make or break grades for students who'd been pulled out of school without warning two-thirds through an academic year? At first, Taylor suggested other choices, including some sort of certificate to replace traditional grades, but ministers in Boris Johnson's government ignored the idea. The algorithm plan was announced by Johnson's education minister, Gavin Williamson, on the 18th of March. Ofqual spent the next 2 months toying with possibilities. It came up with 11 candidate algorithms, labelled Approach 1 through Approach 11, ranged next to each other for consideration like prototype rockets. Approach 10 fell away first. Approach 3 had a genuine shot, as did Approach 1. These algorithms were intelligent guessers, the gist of their work familiar to racetrack patrons, as past form, judgment by eye, and other looser assumptions were blended and sieved for insight. Approach 1 was reckoned the most accurate of the lot. By the end of May, it had the nod. In order for Approach 1 to function, it needed to be fed data. Some of this data could be drawn from Ofqual's own historical records, for instance how well a school had performed in exams in previous years, and some data would have to be generated more speculatively. Teachers around the country were asked to predict what grades their students might have secured if exams had gone ahead. They were also asked to make lists that ranked students against each other by subject. The projected grades and rankings reached Ofqual in mid-June. Because most teachers were expected to be generous, and a minority to be scroogier than the rest, a failsafe was built into Approach 1 that would adjust the incoming grades up or down based on historical precedent. For instance, did a school tend to get about 10 A's in maths a year and had its teachers projected 12 A's for 2020? Well, Approach 1 might suggest the school's 10 highest ranked students in maths could have their A's, but students number 11 and 12 would find they were B's. They might even find they were C's if their school, by some historical quirk, did not typically secure B's. If this seems worrisome written down, it perhaps inspired more confidence when accompanied by reassuring graphs, hundreds of which were produced by Ofqual in its planning and testing phase. Bell curves, spiky histograms, constellation-like scatter plots veined with blue and orange lines. Ofqual already employed statisticians and data scientists because, even in non-pandemic years, it used algorithms to regulate exam grades. Algorithms helped knock out regional inconsistencies. They helped flatten year-on-year inflation. In all sectors, in all parts of life, such problem-solving computer models steer important human matters, influencing what interest rates were offered, how long we'll wait for hip surgery, when's ideal for the next Justin Bieber album to drop. Before 2020, Ofqual's algorithms did not draw much public curiosity, let alone criticism. In the summer of 2020, Approach 1 had the support of teaching unions. The governments of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, plotting with their own national exam regulators, had come up with roughly similar algorithms. By the middle of June, with 2 months to go until grades were due in students' hands, all the necessary data was in. At Ofqual, Roger Taylor and his staff studied the grades the algorithm spat out. It seemed as if fairness was being maintained. The grades were not unduly high or low compared with other years. Considered broadly, students from disadvantaged backgrounds were on course to do slightly better in 2020 than they had in 2019. Approach 1 did create a small proportion of anomalous results, less than a quarter of 1%, which gave Ofqual pause. Bright students in historically low-achieving schools were tumbling, sometimes in great cliff-edge drops of 2 or 3 grades, because of institutional records they had nothing to do with. As documents released by the organisation show, Ofqual discussed the problem, but were unable to find a solution. Roger Taylor did not respond to requests to be interviewed for this story. As late as the 7th of August, Ofqual was concerned enough about the anomalies to send a memo to Boris Johnson's office noting the risks of disadvantage to outlier students. The public was not informed of this risk, and in fact, when Ofqual published a summary of its efforts the following week to accompany the public release of the Approach 1 grades, Taylor struck a tough, even bolshy note. Some students may think that had they taken their exams, they would have achieved higher grades. we will never know. Come the morning of the 13th of August, there were students, thousands, disinclined to leave the matter as vague as all that. The collapse of confidence in what Ofqual and the government had done was instant. At Southmore Academy in Sunderland, Vice Principal Sammy Wright moved between students who were trading pages of grades, stunned. "I tend to be quite positive about things," said Wright, "but this was a shit show. All the teachers I know were off the map angry, furious on behalf of the kids. At Spires Academy in Oxford, not historically a high performer in exams, teachers said they found it especially difficult to console the outliers in the school. Kate Clanchy, on the English staff, told me about her best student, projected to receive the highest possible grade, an A star, but knocked down by algorithm to a C. She deeply believed she was rubbish," said Clanchy. "We had tried all year to demonstrate to her she was not rubbish, yet here was the system insisting, 'We know what you are.'" There would be post-mortem disagreements as to whether the algorithm helped or hindered students from disadvantaged backgrounds. Because of a limitation in Approach 1, niche subjects studied by smaller groups of students tended to be spared downward adjustment, and on the whole, these subjects were more likely to be offered in private, fee-paying schools. While wealthier kids fared better in pocket, Ofqual continued to insist that poorer kids had done better overall. How much consolation this was to devastated individuals can probably be guessed.
The Guardian. The Guardian.
Exams rank. Exams sort. In any given year, they pull aside a large number of ambitious kids and bluntly check their ambitions. Exams are cruel like this, but for all the many ways in which they are unfair, they do allow for something useful, which is a sense of agency. You go in clutching your biro and your fate in hand. You sit down and maybe you ask one of the patrolling teachers for a folded piece of paper to correct the desk's distracting wobble. You turn over your page and now it's all on you. Shit, shit, shit! Taylor and Ofqual would quickly admit that Approach 1 contained an awesome flaw. It allowed for no real agency. It did not give individuals, in Taylor's words, the ability to affect their fate. After March, when schools had been closed and exams cancelled, nothing was on the kids. They were hardly involved till they ripped open their envelopes. In the upstairs corridor at St. Joseph's, Elliston Burrell put his page of grades in his pocket and thought, fleetingly, "I won't go to uni after all. I'll be an artist. I'll be a musician." For years, he hadn't deviated from his plan to become an architect, though there were moments when he had felt frustrated at how much patience it was asking of him. He often thought about a time, about halfway through his school career, when a boy he knew walked out of the gates to pursue a long-shot career in football. And the next time Elliston Burrell saw that boy, he was back on a drive-by visit, contracted to a professional team, sitting behind the wheel of a Mercedes, most way a man. Stuck as a schoolboy, Elliston Burrell often did the sums, adding up the time until he graduated St. Joseph's, then the 7 more years it would take to get through any architecture programme. Always he had stuck to the plan. Now, on his last day at school, and really for the first time in his life, he gave serious thought to abandoning architecture altogether. "I'll be a graphic designer," he thought. "I'll make clothes." That morning, 3 options existed for students like him who questioned their computer-generated grades. They could accept what they'd been given and move on. They could rush home and open their textbooks to study up in their subjects before a series of prove-us-wrong exams that Ofqual had scheduled for autumn. These exams would take place after universities were already full, which, as Ofqual later acknowledged, rendered the option null for anybody who did not wish to sit out for a gap year. Third option, students could appeal or try to. Elliston Burrell took his page of grades to a teacher at St. Joseph's he trusted. "Miss, it doesn't seem right." He explained the situation. A year earlier, in the 2019 exams, he had got a B in Mandarin. In fact, there had been no need for him to retake the exam at all, except to challenge himself. After a year of additional study, more fluent, not less, he had been awarded a C. And the maths grade broke his heart. "An E, miss. It's one up from a fail. It's like saying I sat down for an exam, wrote my name, did a couple of questions and closed the book." The teacher suggested he appeal, sending Elliston Burrell back down the corridor to the maths department to ask what the next steps were. He passed a computer room full of shell-shocked peers, already logging onto admissions pages to see about second-choice universities, third choices, openings they hadn't considered before this morning. Universities around the country were starting to fill. Soon, more than 400,000 places would be gone. When Elliston Burrell got to the maths department, he was met by teachers who were flustered and uncertain about the appeals process. "We don't know what the government's saying yet," Elliston Burrell was told. He tried not to panic. He wanted to make an appeal before his spot on UCL's architecture programme went to somebody else, again. But nobody, not his teachers, not Ofqual, not government ministers, would have been able to say in this moment what counted as admissible evidence for him to mount a protest. He had been told what he was worth and given no means to disagree. Many of those I spoke to in the worlds of education and politics insisted that if Johnson's government had betrayed the country's youth that August morning, it was not with the algorithm. It was with the mess made of appeals. Ofqual had known since the spring that the Approach 1 algorithm would spit out anomalies. It knew these blips would have to be corrected by human intervention, appeals, if they were to be corrected at all. How something as necessary as a process for making those appeals was missing on the 13th of August is a story typical of Johnson-era governance. His is a campaigning government, brought to power on one-sentence promises with bold raspberries blown at detail. Far too late, Johnson's ministers sought to fiddle with aspects of the appeals process that Ofqual had spent a summer planning. Details were rushed or skimped. Nothing was firmly in place when it mattered. And students like Elliston Burrell were left in limbo over a long weekend, watching as 500,000 university places went to other people. On the 16th of August, after Roger Taylor acknowledged a situation that was rapidly getting out of control, a decision was made that the Approach 1 algorithm was by now so tarnished it would be better if they abandoned it. Elliston Burrell was at work the next day on the 17th of August when he heard. Ofqual and the government had decided that every student in England would now receive the grades that were predicted by their teachers back in June. For some, this was good news. In Oxford, that talented young English student got her A star after all. Others were left stranded. Their grades a lot better, but their places at university gone. When I got through to Elliston Burrell that day, he was trying to brave it out, but he sounded glum. He kept repeating dazedly, "I don't even know, man." His grades had been adjusted up. The Mandarin from a C to an A, the maths from an E to a C. He was now an AAC student. Still, it was not quite enough to get him over the line and onto his course, which required at least a B in maths. University terms were due to start in a month. Many admissions offices had agreed to hold places as long as they could so that students could get as much clarity on their grades as possible. If Elliston Burrell had any hope, he needed to nudge up his maths grade from a C to a B. For that to happen, he would have to take the fight to St. Joseph's, the school that had helped shape him since he was 11, the school where they still used a picture of his face in ads and had his paintings on the walls. Most of us will reach our last days at school with a mixed parcel of knowledge. A few facts, a few equations, the reasons why Hitler rose and Hamlet dithered, as well as those other proficiencies that cannot be graded A to U, like how fantastic it feels to make a fierce teacher drop their guard and grin, or when to stick in blackjack, when to twist. I doubt very many of us finish school with the knowledge of who we really are or what we're really capable of. It seems so strange to choose this moment, potentially at a peak, hunger-cresting, to insist on limits. We issue a string of letter grades to determine the worth and potential of a person when they are only at the start of personhood. Elliston Burrell had been told at different times since he was 17 that he was an AAA kid, an ACU kid, an ABC kid, an AAC kid. Now, at 19, he was racing against the clock to prove he was as capable as any AAB kid before an elite university shut its doors to him. What's bizarre to me is that we've created a system where so much rests on something that's so inaccurate. Sam Friedman told me. Friedman is an education executive who, during a crammed career, has run schools, overseen teacher training, and worked as an advisor inside David Cameron's government. Even in a normal year, Friedman said, you've got people's lives being decided on a few grades, when those grades have a 50% chance of being wrong. By Ofqual's own admission, about half the grades issued to school leavers in any given year were in some way aberrant or off. Levels of strictness, pedantry and pity varied from teacher to teacher, marker to marker, region to region. Essay-based subjects in particular were a nightmare for Ofqual to standardise. Such kinks and irregularities as there were got targeted by the algorithms that Ofqual made use of even in non-pandemic years. These algorithms were a bit like desperate duvet shakes, trying to get the edges square on a nation's grades. And even then, when all was said and done, lumps remained. So, forget COVID, Friedman said. Every year, school leavers were sent scuttling off this way or that way, dodging life's cues or joining life's bottlenecks and jams based on a filtering system that was appallingly flawed. Friedman could only think we'd stuck by this flawed system so long because no one had come up with anything better. Because no one's prepared to acknowledge what it would mean to dismantle it all. In August 2020, as Elliston Burrell's options dwindled, he turned to his teachers at St. Joseph's. He reckoned that if he submitted enough evidence about his standard in maths, they might somehow bump up that grade, and in doing so, clear his path to university. Over a fortnight in late August and early September, difficult emails went back and forth between Elliston Burrell and his mother on one side and St. Joseph's and its head teacher, David Garrido, on the other. Would the school consider changing the grade? Why not? Part of the deadlock seemed to be that while Elliston Burrell had spent some of the COVID-disrupted year in class, he had spent more of it with his private tutor. As an adult learner, retaking the year by choice, he was free to study as he chose. He had simply judged he was making better progress one-on-one. Ofqual later said that adult learners were at a particular disadvantage in 2020 because their relationships with schools were likely to be more distant or tenuous than in-house students, and in the end, schools chose the grades. During his final year at St. Joseph's, Elliston Burrell had often worn a special uniform of his own devising. Smart trousers and shirt, brightly coloured coat, a gesture to his midway status, half enrolled and half graduated. It was his bad luck to occupy this middle ground in 2020 when everything was such a mess. The deliberations between Elliston Burrell and St. Joseph's over his maths grade were tortured and sometimes bitter. Garrido, the head teacher, declined to answer my specific questions, except to say that this was probably the most complicated case he had to deal with all year. On the 10th of September, with 7 days to go until admissions closed at UCL, St. Joseph's confirmed it was reviewing the disputed grade. Quickly after that, a decision reached Elliston Burrell by email. The school could not budge. It said. The C stood. He was AAC immutably. and he would have to start figuring out what sort of future could be fashioned from that. Rianne Elliston Pascal flinched when she heard the school's final verdict. She was close to her son. He had been born when Rianne was quite young herself. Coming along premature, she told me, this little 4-pound, 3-ounce boy we weren't sure was going to make it. Now he's this big, deep-voiced, muscular young man who's able to tell us where he wants to go. I've grown up with Josiah. I've openly told him I can get things wrong too. There's no handbook. We can work it out together and crack on. That has kind of forged our closeness. As he grew older, he came to her less and less with his problems, but when he did come, Rianne was used to being able to fix things, or at least buck him up and restore some of his fight so that he might find a fix himself. Something about these weeks in August and September felt different to her, as if this time there might not be any fix. It concerned her too how many other young people, young men, young black men, might have been set adrift like her son. Rianne worked for Croydon Council and she knew very well the compromised dynamics in the borough and the risk for its youths who became discouraged. She told me she was worried about those students with parents who don't have English as their native language, those parents who don't understand what is happening with these grades and are sitting at home accepting them. They may lose their child in a couple of years. They may not know what the driving force behind that even was. In August, she had written to her local councillor. She left a message after the beep for their local MP. Now it was September. Rianne called her pastor for advice, and she turned to colleagues at Croydon Council, encouraging her son to do the same whenever he went in for shifts at Waitrose. "Son," she said to him, even as the UCL deadline got closer, "it's not over." On the 14th of September, mother and son sat down on her bed and composed a long email to the Director of Architecture at UCL. "The last attempt to secure my place," Elliston Burrell wrote. People from church had fed in with suggestions all month. Mates at Waitrose offered encouragement, and one of Rianne's colleagues at Croydon Council agreed to proofread the email before they sent it. A community who could see the person behind the AAC, who knew his million qualities that could not be graded A to U, came together to help him make a final push. It was a blockbuster email. Elliston Burrell read it to me on a rackety train out of Croydon that was taking him to work. The journey was interrupted by a faulty door alarm and an unexplained stop between stations. But even then, it took him the whole trip to read it through. He had included everything. Hopes, near misses, he explained who he was at 19 and who he might become given the chance. As the train pulled into central London, he read me the final passages. "My head and heart are already at UCL. I will do whatever it takes." That same month, there was a long, salty meeting between Ofqual's leadership and the UK Parliament's Education Committee, broadcast online, which picked over the events of the summer and sometimes felt like a criminal trial in which Taylor, his colleagues, even the Approach One algorithm, were co-defendants. Approach One was already a famous failure. Perhaps it was the first algorithm in the history of computer science to be condemned on the front page of every major British newspaper. During the parliamentary meeting, Taylor was urged to publicly disown his co-creation. It would have been easy for him to blame the crisis on a rogue, out-of-control algorithm. With his usual craven briskness, Johnson had done exactly this, muttering about a mutant strain of code. Taylor could not bring himself to denounce Approach One in such terms. The algorithm did what it was supposed to do. Humans, in the end, had no stomach for what it was supposed to do. Algorithms don't go rogue. They don't go on mutant rampages. They only sometimes reveal and amplify the cruddy human biases that underpin them. Ofqual's mistake was to think this exercise, which made plain our usual tricks for filtering and limiting young lives, would be morally tolerable as it played out in public view. Taylor apologised to everyone who had been hurt by Approach One, and later resigned his position as chair of Ofqual. The news passed Elliston Burrell by, focused as he was on his own battle. The last chance email he'd written to UCL was sent on the evening of the 14th of September with less than 2 days to go until the deadline for admissions. He was amazed to receive a reply within hours. His email, eloquent and powerful, had caused a great deal of activity, he read. In fact, it had been kicked up to the top decision makers at UCL, and he was told he could expect more news soon. But how soon was soon? Elliston Burrell began to wonder as 15th of September turned to 16th of September, deadline day. Tense with waiting, he snapped at his mum. Rhiann had glimpsed the state of his email inbox and she lectured him about staying on top of his correspondence at such a critical time. They squabbled. They prayed it out. Elliston Burrell sat on the sofa at home where brusquely, grumpily, still after all a teenager, he began to delete spam emails. Wait, he muttered. His nan was there too. Wait. They had been expecting more news from UCL's Director of Architecture, and somehow Elliston Burrell had missed a separate thread of emails from the admissions office. They'd written to say, wait, that he had a place on the course after all. He only had to reply by 5 p.m. Everyone looked at the clock. 2:15 p.m. The family allowed themselves a minute to scream. Hyenas, Rhiann described it. Then a few minutes to cry. At 2:21 p.m, Elliston Burrell wrote to accept. I met him a couple of hours later at East Croydon Station, where he kept glancing at the platform clock, blinking, shaking his head, staggered at how fine the margins had been till the end. His phone rang and rang as people heard the news, and he spoke to them all in the hoarse, disbelieving tones of someone who'd been lucky to walk away from an accident with only scratches. Thank you. I know. Thank you. Together, we watched the 5 p.m. deadline come around, as though this somehow made everything more official, less stealable. And afterwards, Elliston Burrell tapped on his phone, answering well-done messages, researching course materials, timetables, the right textbooks. After such a wait, the new term, life's next bit, would start in 1 week. At last, Elliston Burrell's last day at school. It was November, cold out, and he pulled up the hood of his coat to walk in from the usual bus stop. He went past St. Joseph's sports pitch, its medical centre, that staff room where they had a mounted photograph of him, beaming, 13, no real clue, gazing down benevolently on every teacher's meeting. Whenever the wind blew open the flaps of his coat, you could see a dangling lanyard and a shiny student ID. He had been an architecture undergrad for 6 weeks. Already, he was tired, stressed by coursework, and thrilled to be these things. He'd come back to St. Joseph's to retrieve some of those paintings of his that still hung on the walls. It was early when he got inside the school, about an hour before morning bell. Elliston Burrell crossed the empty playground and entered a building by one of the common rooms. The few teachers he passed wore face masks, difficult to recognise as they hurried into morning meetings. Educators everywhere were girding themselves for another academic year that was about to be heavily disrupted by COVID. Just a few weeks after Elliston Burrell's final visit to St. Joseph's, the Education Minister, Gavin Williamson, would announce again that exams were off in 2021. Puffing himself up for all the world as if he hadn't been the one to initiate Approach 1 in the first place, Williamson would go on to make a flashy promise that this year we will put our trust in teachers rather than algorithms. At the time of writing, precise details of the 2021 plan have yet to be finalised. Elliston Burrell felt bad for the kids about to leave St. Joseph's without the opportunity to prove themselves in pen and paper exams. At the same time, he was relieved not to have to worry about predictions, approaches, AACs or AABs, any of it. He was finished as a schoolboy. When he climbed the stairs to the art department, there was no one around, and he stood for a moment staring at his paintings. First, the tribute to his late cousin, Miguel. Then, the portrait of his mother. Then the one of himself eating fruit. He'd forgotten that these paintings were once done on thick wooden boards so heavy and unwieldy that they were nailed directly to the school brick. He dragged over a chair and began pulling and scrabbling. Plaster flakes got under his fingernails. Finally, he wrenched the portraits free.
For more Guardian long reads in text and a selection in audio, go to theguardian.com/longread or find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/theguardianlongread.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.